Kristen Harrington. How are you?
Hello, Michael Ryan. Michael S. Ryan.
Don't
Mike
forget,
Ryan.
Don't ever forget the S again.
MSR.
You forget the S.
I used to call you RSM, which is your initials backwards, but it stood for Rat Sword Man, because when we first met, you told me the story of killing a rat with a sword in one of your apartments.
Well, I didn't kill him. I cut off his tail, and then he died later on from the wounds.
Well, that's a slow killing him, then.
Well, he was half caught in a trap, and
did him a favor by getting the tail?
I didn't really know what to do, to be honest. I was petrified.
Why did you have a sword?
It was a band house. So we had lots of things laying around, you
what
know?
Other props did you have kicking around?
Jeez, there was a gated community, like a fancy community that was close by to us, and I don't know how it got in our house, but the entrance sign to that gated community ended up in our house.
Oh, I'm sure someone donated it to you.
Yeah, it was donated by the fancy people.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a McDonald's trash can. That was the one means for garbage disposal in the house.
Certainly, it never overflowed.
It just sat in the middle of the living room.
was your focal point.
There were points when you couldn't see any of the floor because there was so much stuff atop it.
Mm. Okay, gross. we don't live that way now.
No, we have a nice house. And we're not, I wouldn't say we're wealthy yet in terms of money. We're very doing very good. We're happy. We have a house. We have lots of things. But in the grand scheme of things, you know, we're getting by and doing pretty well. But today we're going to talk about perspective a little bit, I think. And we're gonna read a story from our book, and simply titled Venezuela. And should we give any information before we dive into it, or? Today's episode is sponsored by Baked by Butcher. Based in Waterville, Nova Scotia, Emma Butcher puts her heart and soul into her delicious creations. Quality custom cakes and pastries for any memorable milestone or absolutely no occasion at all. We have ordered a number of edible creations from Emma, including one for a recent wedding anniversary shoot that we smashed open and stuffed each other's faces with.
Her designs are whimsical, and the cake is the best you've ever had. You can follow Baked by Butcher on Instagram and Facebook and place a custom order for your special celebration. I would just say, and we'll talk about this more later, but this is a story from our book, You and Me, Travel, Misadventures, and Love Around the World. And I would say 90% of the stories in this book are funny, lighthearted
shit stories and
misadventure stories of our travels around the world. But there are a handful, Venezuela being one, that has a different mood to it. And we certainly could have told more of those stories. The purpose of this book really was meant to be to bring you some joy and laughter, but it wouldn't be a travel book if we didn't include some of those encounters that, as you say, offered perspective.
So yeah, we'll get into it right now. You're going to hear me reading from our audiobook, the chapter titled Venezuela, from our co-authored book. Venezuela. We sat on the waterfront in Cartagena and ate one of the most delicious burritos we've ever had. We've been traveling for about 3 weeks by this point, into the thick of it all, and we're starting to feel in unison with our surroundings. Our bellies were full, and we watched the sun set over the historic city. We were 4,000 kilometers from home, surrounded by good food, drinks, natural beauty, and that feeling you get when you travel, the reason you do it in the first place. A man and a woman with two small boys approached us. The kids were around 6 and 7. They held onto their parents' hands and didn't make a sound. Their eyes were big and sad, something the eyes of a child should never be. As the burrito and beer poured down our throats, the man started to speak to us in Spanish. Instantly, without thinking, We didn't want anything to do with them. Cartagena is a city of sales. It's a constant barrage of bargaining and overly aggressive people trying to sell you things. That's how people make their living. Everyone has something they think your life will be made better by having and is there to offer you the deal of a lifetime. And in a city like that, where you're constantly bombarded with sales pitches and pushy people 24/7, your initial reaction is a simple no thanks. You don't even pay attention to them. You've already passed by 500 people that day that you didn't pay attention to. There's no reason to start now. As soon as they approached, I instinctively said the same thing I did to all the others that day. To water salesmen, giant aphrodisiac ant salesmen, the women impressively balancing fruits in their heads, drug dealers, hat salesmen, and every other person trying to make a buck. No gracias. That's when they typically switch over to broken English and say something like, "Oh, big guy, you need these ants for your wee-wee. Wife will like it. Make you very, very big penis." I'll then seamlessly switch over to my native tongue and give a definitive, "No thanks, bud." This man did not switch over to limited English, which was strange for a Colombian schemer. Every person who sells something in a foreign country can at least say, "Good deal on blank," or, "My friend, this blank, what you need?" I told him that I couldn't speak Spanish, and I can't. I can order my go-to chicken with garlic meal off a menu, thank someone, and ask for up to 6 beers at a time. The intro of Pretty Fly for a White Guy by The Offspring only counted to 6, so in the scenario where 7 of anything is needed, I'm out. I told the man, "No Espanol," and determined that the phone cases, trinkets, and condoms he may have been offering were of no use to me. He started to repeat the word Venezuela over and over. At the time, Venezuela was not in a good place. I didn't know exactly why, but a mass exodus of the people was happening. I try to pay attention to what's going on in the world, but it's hard to be deeply familiar with the political situations of all 195 countries. Things to me are typically either good or bad. I knew that at the moment, things were bad in Venezuela. The details to anything like this are surely a long, lengthy narrative of corruption, rebellion, and conflict. The intricacies for someone on the outside can be tough to really put together properly. He talked in Spanish with a passion that, to me, just meant he was likely a really, really good sunglasses salesman. I just shrugged my shoulders and said, "No Espanol," again. He kept repeating Venezuela, his body language becoming more and more deflated. When he realized that the one word that we both understood was not going to help, he walked a few steps away from us with his family to talk amongst themselves. I clearly can't speak Spanish, but Kristen can. She listened in. The man turned to his wife and told her we don't understand them, that we won't help. The mom turned to the little kids, her eyes watery. "It's going to be all right," she said. "Mama will find us food." She squeezed the little boys by the shoulders and looked them in the eyes. "Mama will do whatever she has to." There was a look in her eyes, something I'd never really seen in real life before. It was utter desperation, it was fear, and it was bravery. Kristen realized what was happening and told me what was going on. This was not someone trying to sell us something. This was a family that had fled a country in turmoil. They had hit a breaking point. They needed food, somewhere to stay. It wasn't a scam and they weren't looking for money for drugs. They were trying to survive. When we saw the tears in the father's eyes and the mom reassuring her two little boys that everything would be all right, we realized it was different. They were people down on their luck. A few things went the wrong way and all of a sudden you're homeless in another country with no money. When you see people like that, you start to understand crime. You understand how someone could turn to robbery, to becoming a drug mule. All the parents cared about was their own family. They didn't want to be begging for money. I could tell how hard it was for them to do it. But they did because they'd do anything for each other, like anyone, anywhere in the world would. I'll never forget the look in the mom's face. She would have fought an army, climbed a mountain barefoot, or cut off her arms just so her kids could be all right. And there's nothing more powerful than that, When someone gets to the point that they're willing to do anything, they're willing to die. They were a young couple, probably our age. They were dressed normal, both attractive, and the kids were well behaved. They could have been us. They were just a family who fled a bad place to try and make a better life. We, on the other hand, had flown across the world to be there by choice, eating at 4 different restaurants a day, seeking out gelato spots, Googling best dessert in Cartagena. We may not be millionaires, but compared to them, we were Bill and Melinda Gates. We went there to experience a different culture. They were there because everything they knew and loved in their home went to hell. We had to do something. As they started to walk away, I yelled out to them, "Señor, señor!" He turned around. I don't know how much money we had on us, but we emptied our pockets out and gave them all the pesos we had. It wasn't a lot. It might have been $50 or $60 at the most. The man started to cry. Tears streamed down his face and he got down on his knees. He put his hands together in a prayer formation and looked up to the sky like he was thanking God. The mother was shaking. She was so happy. The sad eyes in the kids turned into inquisitive, hopeful eyes that every child deserves to have. In a few days, we'd fly home. We'd go to the house we own, turn on the lights, drink water from our tap, and fill our fridge with groceries we buy around the corner from us. I'd have my struggles, getting shows, trying to get more social media followers, and trying to write songs people can relate to. Kristen would have to deal with a messy studio, expensive materials, and figure out ways to market abstract art to stay relevant. It's not the easiest life in the world, but it's far from hard. They walked away holding hands. We finished our meal and left in silence. The sun set and the streets came alive with the energy and spirit of a Latin American city at night. We got back to Canada a few days later. I thought of the family. I thought of the little boys. I hoped that wherever they were, their stomachs were full and they were laughing, kicking a soccer ball around with other kids their age, mom and dad laughing and drinking pina coladas as they watched on. I hope they found a place to stay, maybe overlooking the ocean and a good school nearby. Dad got a good job as a security guard at one of the museums, and mom was working at a daycare. I smiled to myself thinking about it, but knew deep down it probably wasn't true.
I want to take us back to that day and specifically our walk back to the hotel we were staying in. In the story, you talked about kind of leaving that dinner in silence and leaving that scenario. I remember us being silent for probably a full day. That's not to say we didn't speak, but I think that experience really resonated in a way that we just, there were no words. It was such a, and we've had these eye openers before, but it was so personal. I think we were pretty deep in our trip at that point as well. So you're really feeling those endorphins and the bliss of all the great things. And it was just a necessary reminder for us in that moment.
Well, I think one thing that also made it really real was the fact that we kind of rough it, I guess, when we travel. Like we're pretty good at finding deals and just like this cheap spot to stay that's still half decent, you know, search out where you can get good deals for to eat and everything. So we're smart and we plan out how we do everything.
Yeah, we're hand washing clothes in hotel rooms. That's
and then like we're like, oh yeah, we got it rough. Not we have it rough, but we're not traveling like we're millionaires anyway. But in that instance, it was just this overwhelming sense of where we truly fit in the world and how damn lucky we are. Because again, we're so-called roughing it traveling, and we're still just in such a good place compared to, I don't know what percentage of the world, but of such a high percentage of people in the world don't have any of the simple things that we have in life.
I remember a solo trip I took in my early 20s to Guatemala and speaking with a Guatemalan gardener who in some way sort of said like, oh my gosh, you must be so well off or wealthy to be here, and thinking to myself, you know, I'm a student. I spent probably my last, you know, all of my money to be there, and thinking at that time that no, I'm definitely not wealthy, and by North American standards, wasn't, and am still not. I mean, we're two artists, but there have been a number of occasions and what I'll now, as a grown-up, call opportunities in our travels to be reminded of just how, you know, quote, wealthy we are.
Yeah.
And this was absolutely one of those times. I think the other thing that made it really real was this was a couple that was probably more or less our age. We don't have children, but we kind of saw ourselves in them, yeah. I would say.
Yeah, they were the Latin version of us, basically. There was something about them. Like, they just looked so normal. And that feels weird to say, but they weren't in disheveled clothes. They weren't dirty. They were just four people down in their luck. And we happened to be in a position where us doing something very small could help them.
Yeah. And as you said, we gave them $50 or $60, whatever
peso.
Yeah, but I was going to, the exchange,
yeah,
whatever
yeah.
the exchange would have ended up being, it was so much to them. It was the equivalent to someone handing us $50,000, not $50. And you could just feel that and see that in them. And again, just a reminder that we too live paycheck to paycheck at times, but never will it hopefully feel like that.
Well, just living where we do, like, there's always, and just having family and even social assistance and things set up in our country, like, obviously you can fall on rough times in Canada, and there's tens of thousands of people who need help, but we are set up a little bit better than, well, yeah, having to flee your country out of fear of dying either through military means or starvation or whatever it may be. Like, that is something that has never, ever crossed my mind. Like, when I first started playing music as a young pup, when we're trying to take over the world, living in our aforementioned band house there, like, we had nothing at all. But at any point, we could call someone or call a friend and say, listen, we don't have supper tonight. Can you get us some McDonald's? Or like, it's just so, like, we were very poor. We didn't have any money. And there was five of us and we were living gig to gig. We didn't have any other jobs, no other income. So it was just the only way we ate, paid rent, and did everything we did was through gigs. But that's our choice. That's a luxury. We're trying to live the American dream. Do you say that if you're in Canada? Living the Canadian dream doesn't have the same effect. Anyways, we're living the American dream in Nova Scotia and just trying to be the next Tragically Hip or whoever we want it to be like. So it was 100% our choice to do that. And again, we had, you know, we call our parents, hey, mom, can you send us a care package? They'd be sending us to us anyway. So it wasn't like if we needed something, we could get it. And that's us being none of us from wealthy families or anything, just average Canadians. But that's the way most people live here. And it's certainly not taken away from the hard times people have, like, in the past or now. Like, it's the price of everything is going up. It's hard to get by. But in moments like what we experience in Venezuela, when you compare our hardships now to what people like that are going through.
The choice was such a big differentiation there. I remember us researching after the fact what was going on in Venezuela, just wanting to have a better understanding. Certainly being in Colombia, we had heard of this happening, with Venezuela being a neighboring country, of course. And we even encountered other Venezuelan refugees, you might remember, in Bogota. And, you know, after that moment, it sort of became more in our awareness, I'll say. But it really, it wasn't about these people saying, you know, I'm fleeing from a difficult situation or war-torn country, though that was the case. It was, there is not food available on the shelves to purchase. It really was not about patriotism or trying to fight the good fight. There were no resources available. You did not have a home to go home to. You did not have an option to even buy food. Even if you wanted to steal food, eventually it got to be like, it just does not exist here. There was no choice left for this family. And you could see, and you talked about this in the story, the anguish, like I'm sure any one of us would have, not only having experienced that, so the week that they had prior to that moment was probably the worst week or month or however long it had been of their entire life. And they were left to ask for help from people whose language they didn't even share.
And one of the things that just, once we realized what was going on, and I remember we, as I mentioned in the story, we had this giant burrito we ate each. And it was one of those, it was cheap. It was like $5 maybe at the most, but it was huge and delicious.
Yeah.
And I was stuffed and I just kept eating, ate the whole thing. I was in one of those states where you can barely move. You're so stuffed.
Mm-hmm.
I had like 2 beer in front of me, like just a glutton, just a fucking slob. And then
just vacation, Mike.
Yeah. You just, I don't know, everyone, like Christmas, Thanksgiving, sometimes on vacation, you just eat so much, you're just overflowing. It's coming out of every orifice of your body.
Mm-hmm.
Orifice, is that how you say it?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And then when we realized what was going on, and I looked at those kids, and I could tell they were maybe not starving, but they probably didn't eat in a few days. Like, they were just dead quiet.
They were silent, yeah.
Like, 2 little boys, mm-hmm. however old they were, 6, 8, can't tell with kids.
Nor can I, but yeah, that's a good estimate. We'll go with that.
They were just, they were scared. Like, it's hard to even talk about it, really, but they were scared. And then when the mother, after you said what she was saying, like, I'll do anything to make sure you're okay, you're like, holy shit, that's heavy.
Yeah.
Like, that hits you at the core. And especially, like I said, I'm a stuffed friggin' slob. Just, we had gelato earlier that day, a burrito, a bunch of beer. We're just walking around. We're walking around this place where we traveled to. We paid to get on planes, boats, buses, whatever we took there. And they, who knows how the fuck they got there. Like, they might have just ran. They might have friggin' been under the blanket in the back of a truck, scared they were going to get shot or captured. Like,
you want so, I'm choking up a bit here. You want so badly to help everybody. Like, you realize in that moment just the divide that's there and the suffering and struggle. And there's something also so inspiring about that human nature, just to give it your all and do it for your family and your children. And like, these instincts kick in, or must kick in. I can't at all relate, but we witnessed this. You feel it. You feel that pain and struggle that they're going through. And yeah, you're sitting there and how often have we talked about this idea of traveler's guilt? And again, this book is fun and funny, and all of those things are true. And for the most part, of course, you love having these experiences, and mostly they're positive and rewarding and educational and eye-opening and all of these amazing things that make it important to us. But absolutely, we have struggled not only in this moment and on that trip, but lots of trips where we have witnessed extreme poverty. And you think about, and we talk about this even while we're there, like I remember us being on a train in Thailand, I think it was, and going through a community, and you were able to look down into some of the homes, and they were just these cement boxes. And we've seen this. I mean, if you're on the internet or you have a television, of course you've seen images of this. I don't know why it's so profoundly different, but seeing it in real life just is.
Yeah. Especially when there's kids involved, and that it was just a couple, like, they reminded of ourselves, and it's, yeah, you're detached from when you see it on the news or you see anything like that happen so far away, but when it's firsthand, it just hits you right in the gut, and in that moment you want to help everybody, and then you realize you can't.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I guess, the dilemma you face in those situations. Like,
yeah, and you're also left to go on with your day. So then what? And this was, we were in Bogota after Cartagena and encountered other refugees. And I think we bought lunch for that family at that little hole in the wall type of place that we happened to be eating at. And yeah, like, I think because we better understood the circumstances, we were just like, let's go get all our money out of the bank and give it away. And I don't say that to be a martyr by any means. It's just, it was almost to make ourselves feel better, I think.
Yeah. And just knowing we are able to do that. And when you're buying something in a place like that, it is much less expensive. So you can give someone, a family, whatever, 20, 30, 40 bucks, and they're going to all eat. And you know that. And
yeah. And it's so different than just making a donation online, which of course is still important, and we do what we can. But seeing the faces of these people that you can just make that transaction with and know that you're saving them in that day, at least. Who knows what happened to this family the following day or weeks?
Yeah,
we'll never forget them.
Like I say in the story, I just hope everything worked out for them, but the chances that it truly did are probably pretty low. Like, I don't know what the chances are of going to another country as a refugee with no opportunities and everything turning out okay. Like, I just can't imagine it being that high.
Yeah.
But
sadly, you're probably right.
But who knows? Like, yeah, maybe what I said in the story did come true. They're playing soccer in the streets, and their parents got jobs, and they're drinking pina coladas, and life is good. And I guess it's good to be hopeful for things like that. But at the end of the day, you just want to do what you can to help them when you can.
Do you find having that perspective easier because you've experienced this, or can we all have that same lesson?
Well, I can't say I've experienced it like that, obviously. I think I've always felt a little bit more like that than most people. Just, I guess part of it just being easygoing, like, oh, don't have a car, I'll just hitchhike 12 hours and I'm not worried about it. Like, just having this mentality of, oh, it's all going to work out kind of thing. That's just being a positive person who, I guess, believes in myself and what I do in terms of that outlook on life. But I can't understand what they've been through.
But just the observation of that, I suppose, is what I'm asking. having observed some of those hardships in others.
Yeah.
Is that something that you believe we can all embody?
I think it just realizing that it's actually happening. And well, I didn't know if we should bring this up, but we decided to talk about this today because the war in Ukraine started 2 days ago. Might as well say it.
Yeah. And who knows when we'll release this podcast, but we had planned to record a podcast today on a really funny story.
About me shitting my pants, not shitting my pants, more or less.
Shitting your pants and getting shit on, yeah. Really.
We'll
get to that story. Yeah. Don't worry. We'll tell you that story too, but we just had a discussion this morning of, we just can't talk about that story today. I'm not in that headspace or energy. I'm upset.
Yeah.
I feel like my heart is breaking for those families. Just, you see some of these images of, I read one about an 80-year-old man that showed up to fight with his little suitcase with a couple of t-shirts. Like, my God, if that isn't perspective, just. So, yeah, we're sitting in that energy today and felt like this parallels to some of those emotions we experienced in that moment.
Yeah, it's hard to believe that just we're surrounded by an easy life, really, in comparison to these things that are happening around the world. Like, every single person you encounter on the streets anywhere in North America has a $500 phone in their pocket.
Yeah.
Like, every single person, I don't want to say every single person, but it just the hardships we have here. And again, I don't want to take away from a lot of the stuff that is happening. Like, there's lots of homelessness, lots of the mental health crisis here. There's a lot of things going on, but
struggle is relative, of course. Like, I think that's what you're acknowledging.
Yeah.
Here. I think that there is inspiration and hopefulness to be found in some of these dark days. And that's really what the story Venezuela was also meaning to highlight. So it's recognition of struggle, which then turns to perspective, and then really gratitude for what you have. And even I just had this memory come to mind with when my mother was sick and essentially dying of cancer. I remember her watching this segment on the news of he was an older man in a wheelchair. And I think either his daughter or granddaughter was also in a wheelchair. And it was kind of this heartwarming story when all was said and done about the things they get to do together and their perseverance and whatnot. And I remember my mom watching and saying how inspired she was by the fight that they had put up and their strength. And I'm looking at her like, my God, you have been through hell and back. Like, you too are that to me and to others. Yeah. But I just admired in her that at her absolute worst was still able to see that perspective, I guess, in what others are enduring.
Well, the bravery amongst the Ukrainian people and the unity and what they're showing as a nation is amazing. Like,
yeah.
Everybody is armed and willing to fight.
Yes.
Like, a bunch of these famous boxers who are millionaires, champions of the world or former champs are fighting for their country. Like, they could just get on a plane and go anywhere. I saw a couple got married. They sped up their wedding. They're going to get married in May, but they got married yesterday, I guess, which would be February 25th. And they spent their wedding night collecting rifles to fight. Like,
yeah,
they are tough and
they
proud
are tough
and
motherfuckers,
brave.
Like, how's that for a love story?
Yeah, that's a beautiful story.
Yeah,
like, this is it seems like a crazy movie.
Like, it's interesting now too because, like you say, it's day two of this war, invasion, insanity, and we don't know what's coming next.
Yeah, the mood is definitely somber. Like, there's, it could end short, very quickly, like, mm-hmm. in a, well, I don't want to say positive way, because lots of people are going to die, but it could end soon, and everything is sort of back to normal, or it could escalate into a much larger global sphere, and...
It's wild, the timing as well. So, here in Nova Scotia, at least, it's... in a couple of days where the COVID restrictions are going to be lifted. So we're entering a new phase of lifestyle and, quote, freedom.
Celebration.
I lose that very loosely here. And then this happens. Like, the timing is crazy for having this sense of hopefulness and then just being reminded that it's sort of... a double-edged sword, in that it's this heartache and hardship, but also a reminder of the fortune and beauty that we have in our lives.
What do you think, what does freedom mean to you?
Oh, are we going to go there?
We're going there.
I think we are responsible to find our own freedoms. I don't think there's going to be a one-size-fits-all definition to what that means. So, unfortunately, nowadays, there's risk in even talking about what that means, because you're faced with counter opinions, often are pretty aggressive. You know, you see people divided on some of these issues, and as of late, freedom being one of them. And I think on the surface, we can all agree that freedom is good. Freedom is something that we're entitled to. Freedom is a human right, or however you want to frame that. But we've witnessed the mechanisms put in place to achieve that don't feel aligned with the goal, I will say. So I certainly feel like I have a free life myself, despite having to follow rules. I think that if you look at the greater good and the health and well-being and management of a population, we have to have some boundaries and structure to how we live. I know that that means something different to everyone.
Yeah.
But taking it back to this theme of perspective that seems to be coming up, if you think about what we have been challenging or disagreeing or arguing on in terms of freedom in Canada, and now today witnessing what's happening in the Ukraine and all of these other examples that we've observed in our travels and otherwise, I think freedom might be defined differently for some of those who've been having a little bit of a temper tantrum.
It's a good way to put it, for sure.
How about you? It's a hard question. It's a loaded question, certainly these days, which I think is a problem in and of itself, that we don't all feel safe, perhaps, to talk about these things openly. We don't have to agree to feel safe, but that's not necessarily where we are.
It's a hard one to answer, for sure. Like, I certainly feel free here, even though the last 2 years, one of the industries hardest hit has been the music industry.
Yeah.
But I think most people see issues as either black or white. They can't see in the middle. Like, it's like, do I agree with everything the government did in terms of lockdowns and shutting down everything? Not at all. But do I understand it 100%?
Yeah.
Like, there's two sides, and...
and there's hindsight in addition to two sides.
Yeah. People just, they can't look at another person's perspective with a critical lens and just try to understand. There's just not enough empathy amongst people. It's either I'm on this side or that side, and I'm sticking to it. And if you're not with me, you're against me and I don't like you.
Yes.
And yeah, I on every issue, I try to look at it with just open eyes and understand people's perspective. Like,
it's always helped for me to remind myself that as passionately as I may feel about a topic and as much conviction as I have in my opinion, whoever I may be countering, I'll call it, feels exactly that same level of sureness about how they feel. Like, that alone to me is a way to have patience and understanding. Like, they are just a mirror of you. Their opinion may be different, but they're feeling the same way.
Yeah, I think that people just were influenced so much by current way that we receive media and information, just social media. If you believe a certain way, you're just likely your friends are going to think that way. Likely the news sources you read are going to be that way. So you're just in that rabbit hole of those particular ideologies.
The algorithm keeps telling you how right you are.
Yeah. And then, like, when Trump won there, 2016, I remember seeing an article about people just shocked. Like, how is this possible? Like, mm-hmm. I don't know anyone who likes Trump. But exactly, like, all their friends are very similar to...
Yeah, you hear that often. Like, well, I'm hearing from everybody. And it's like, are you hearing from everybody or your, you know, four closest friends that agree with you?
And even, like, take someone, like, as polarizing as him. And I would say I don't like Donald Trump. I think he's hilarious. But I would say I don't agree with pretty much everything he does. But I understand why people like him.
Yeah.
Like, he came in a time when this divide was already happening. He stood up for a group of people, even though they're the people he takes advantage of most, typically. But, like, I just don't understand how people can just completely discredit, like, someone just because they like someone or something. Like, you don't know if this person grew up in middle America with nothing and was always looked down upon by society in so many ways. And then someone, although I don't believe his motives, he says he's going to help people like that. And you're like, yeah, fuck, I like this guy. He believes in what I believe. He's not progressive. I'm not progressive. Yeah, awesome. But again, I don't like the guy, but I understand why people would gravitate towards him. Like, that's just looking at it with a open lens, I guess, and trying to figure that out. And I think that is very lacking in society in general.
I imagine for the most part, we all want the same things. We all want to be understood and accepted and heard and
safe and
comfortable to be happy. Ourselves. And that looks different for everyone, much like freedom looks different for everyone or perspective looks different for everyone. And yeah, it seems like we have a harder time than ever just being open to those differences.
And I think people don't understand, like, that you are the way you are because of certain circumstances that you likely didn't have control over. Me being born into a small community in rural Cape Breton, like, I had no choice of who my parents were or where I grew up. And I became who I am based on a million factors around me. When I was born, I opened my eyes and I was in Afghanistan and my parents were farmers and my dad got killed by a bomb from the US. Maybe there'd be a higher chance that I would go one way. Maybe I'd become a terrorist, you know?
What was the chapter in the book that you talk about this? Michael Jackson, maybe? Or... when you talk about or being born elsewhere.
Yeah. Yeah. We were in Costa Rica, and I just had this thought of, yeah, being, if I was born in another place, I would just be a completely different person, obviously. Like, that's quite apparent. But even if I was the same child, this whatever my name, maybe my name would be different, but if I even looked exact same, everything, but I was just in another place in the world,
mm-hmm.
what's around me would shape me completely differently. And if I was born in any of those poorer countries that we travel to, I wouldn't be recording a podcast right now. I'd be busking on the streets like that Michael Jackson impersonator that we saw, who,
right,
that, who like was pretty good. Like, he wasn't bad, but he wasn't MJ.
He wasn't MJ.
And his moves were kind of shady, but he went for it, you know. Yeah. He was going for it. And I remember some young American guys walking by, and they were kind of just laughing at him, and they threw him like a penny or something, just kind of as a joke. I like, those fuckers, like, the guy's giving it his all there. He's
yeah,
like, the circumstances where that he grew up in are very different from the ones that you and your popped collars grew up in.
It's interesting that you talk about where you were born and how that would influence you, because I feel now that because we've had the opportunity to visit some of these places that are so unlike our own, and oftentimes seeing the poverty that is within them, that it has shaped us differently than had we never been.
Well, you can't understand it without seeing it firsthand.
It's just been so impactful to see it and feel it in that way. And I'll go back to Guatemala real quickly, and because I remember that was the first time that I had traveled internationally to a developing country. And not only was I there, but I was in El Salvador and Honduras and Nicaragua, and I witnessed civil war firsthand. I slept on top of a hostel rooftop one night because it wasn't safe to even be indoors because of war. And, you know, there were these little examples of that happened. But I was so touched and changed by what I saw at that age. It was so different than my life that it actually inspired me to then go on and study international development in university. Yeah. So it certainly has shaped and will continue to shape us as adults, just having these experiences. And I mentioned earlier traveler's guilt, which I think we really started, like, we feel that more as we grow older and maybe have more awareness to these things. But we now are thinking about some of the travel that we have coming up that we'll talk about later.
Yeah.
Is more about immersing yourself in a community or giving back to a community or learning about the culture. It's not just for leisure. And that excites me now more than the idea of just, you know, being at a 5-star resort for a month.
And I think
which would be great, but yeah.
Nothing wrong with that, yeah. Pina coladas every day for breakfast.
There you go. Yeah.
I think I know myself, as I've grown older, I've probably become more empathetic in general. Like, and I don't know if that's just with age or just the experiences I had. But like you said, as if we were younger, maybe these things wouldn't have been quite as apparent and quite as meaningful to us. Like, if we were 20 when this Venezuelan story happened, would we have reacted the same? I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But all I do know is that we are so lucky here to have what we have, to be able to walk around the corner to get groceries, to know if things go completely sour, like, I can get a check from the government for a couple $100s. Like, things, like, obviously I don't want to go on welfare. I'm not planning to, but we live in a place where we don't have to worry about bombs being dropped. We don't have to worry about these life-changing things that could happen at any moment that happen to people all around the world every day.
There was something divine about that moment where we met that Venezuelan family, though, not just for our own clarity, but the fact that we were two people sitting in that space at that time, and that we were the two people, despite our differences, clear differences. I mean, being white skinned for starters, like yeah. We clearly were tourists or not Colombian. Like we were there at that time. They chose to approach us. I understood enough of the language at that point in our lives that we could decipher
if you weren't
the circumstances.
There, like, I again would have just thought it was a guy trying to sell me something.
Yeah, and even 10 years earlier, I wouldn't likely have understood the language in a way that I needed to. I mean, it felt like everything. The fact that we even had that much money in our pockets, like typically we're not traveling with, you know, paper bills kind of thing, and. Yeah. It felt like such a gift for both of us, really, for that family and for us to be able to have that exchange. And here we are years later still. I mean, it never leaves you.
Well, the guy, he obviously thanked us profusely, but his first reaction was to thank God.
Yeah.
Like, he dropped to his knees and looked up at the sky. And you don't have to be religious or believe in God in any way, but that man did, and his prayers were answered.
Yeah, that was the closest probably that we felt to God in our lifetime. Yeah. I mean, it felt like such a blessing for us to be the people who were chosen to have that exchange with that family. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's good, you know, like.
And now our hearts will be with those in the Ukraine, and we will see how this unfolds. And while we're not there to maybe have that direct handoff, I think it's important that we, even spending this time today, having a conversation.
Yeah, I think just be nice. Just do something nice for somebody.
Yeah.
You don't have to give money away. It doesn't have to be for someone from a war-torn country. Like, just do something nice today and tomorrow. And maybe just your niceness will inspire them to do something. And so we're not perfect by any means or doing nice things all the time, but I'm trying to remind myself right now as well. Like,
yeah, that's just it. Yeah, of course. We have bad days, and we both know that I can be cranky, and
you can.
We're human. That of course. It's just I think in light of what's happening and how we feel about that in this moment, it's important to reflect on it and share some of those thoughts.
Yeah, and again, just show some empathy for someone. If it's a perspective you don't understand, just try to listen. And try to put yourself in their shoes and see why they got to that point. And there's obviously positions that are going to be not right or bad. And I'm not talking about those. But if someone just shares a different viewpoint from you, just try to look at it a little bit differently and see what they're saying, why they're coming at it from that angle.
Well, I'm really glad that you chose to include this story in our book. It is a standalone, I would say.
Yeah, it doesn't really. It fits into the fact that it's a travel book and adventures happen while traveling. But for the most part, the book is just a funny stories. And then right now, we might as well tell people to go to our website and grab a copy of our book. What better time to do it than now?
So tell them where it's at. Give them the details.
No pressure, buds. Like we said, this is a little bit different podcast, but check us out at www.mikeandkristen.ca for all your Mike and Kristen needs. And yeah, we just appreciate you listening. And tell a friend about this podcast if you can. That's the best way that word can get out about this. And we're going to keep talking about our experiences in the world, traveling, our artistic experiences. We're going to bring in guests and review us on wherever you listen to this. That would be greatly appreciated.
Sending all our love.
Peace, kids. I don't know why I said that.
You don't have to keep it if you don't want to.
I'll keep it.